and over and over again while we were there that there's no viable alternative to Benjamin Netanyahu, so they're just going to keep him in power despite all of these corruption charges and him being in court and his wife being in court for all this stuff. It doesn't matter. They're still going to keep this guy in power for the foreseeable future because there's no viable alternative.
And their former leader, remember the story, their former leader who made a peace deal, was assassinated by his own people.
Yitzhak Rabin, Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, was assassinated by a Jewish settler.
Right. And another assassination story, the church that we visited, Jacob's Well, in I believe that was Nablus, the story about the Christian preacher there who was stabbed with an axe and stabbed like 20 times, and we saw the mortar holes in the outside of the church. It's just like a lot of Christian Zionists think that like the Zionist Jews are their friends, but really they don't understand that they're treated terribly over there, right?
Yeah, that's something that in recent years I've grown to understand more and more. I thought that the Jews would at least be tolerant toward the Christians. I thought it was just, oh, well, Arabs are terrorists, Muslims are terrorists, and that's all there is to it. But they are just as harsh, just as brutal, just as intolerant of the Palestinian Christians as they are the Muslims. So it's not that they're concerned about Islam or Muslims. They just don't like anyone that isn't a Jew, period. It's that Jewish supremacism again. And so a lot of them, including in Ramallah and Bethlehem, which used to have very large Christian presences, many of them have left for other countries, for the United States and elsewhere, because it's just been, it's almost intolerable to live there. So no question, those Christian Zionists who think that they are doing God a favor by supporting the Jews are only, really only bringing trouble down on their fellow Christians. Kind of like, you know, saying, well, we need to support Donald Trump in Syria because he's going after the Syrian army and all that. Well, it's actually the pro-Western militias that were going in there throughout Syria, slaughtering the Christian population. So you got to really research and find out what you're supporting. And if you are Christian and you do care about the church and fellow Christians, then you really, really owe it to yourself and to those other Christians to look into what Israel is doing to the Christian community in the Palestinian territories and in Israel.
Absolutely. And in our part of our delegation, some other members were part of the clergy and preachers and stuff. So they're trying to hit that angle too. That's where they really have the stranglehold over the United States, is in the Bible Belt with the Christian Zionists. So here, let's finish up this clip real quick. We didn't get to finish with some of the settlers' point of views. I just want people to see this since we were talking about it.
Friends of Goldstein say he was not a madman and would not kill himself, just protecting the interests of his homeland. And explaining the philosophy of his actions, well, they say it's something Westerners simply cannot understand.
Many Jews celebrated Purim, a holiday of unity signifying victory over their enemies. There were those who felt Goldstein's actions could not have come on a better day.
Do you consider Dr. Goldstein a martyr, hero?
Yes, yes.
You consider him a hero?
I most certainly do.
I was proud to know him, and I think he's one of the finest people I'd ever met.
Even after what he's done?
Even after.
He's a doctor in Israel. His name familiar to many because he provided medical help for Jews wounded during the Intifada. What was also familiar was his political outlook. He was very critical of the peace process. His hero and good friend was the late Rabbi Meir Kahana.
What he did was something which is a loyal act of heroism on behalf of the Jewish people.
This is how they're speaking about a murderer.
The most upsetting
mass murderer
part of this whole thing isn't that the Arabs were killed. It was that Dr. Baruch Goldstein was killed.
He did something that had to be done just to show the world, to show the Jewish people, that we're not going to tolerate this government.
I wish I had the guts to do it, too.
Like the man they were...
Okay, that's enough. I mean, what's your take after watching that, Jake? You could probably put it into words better than I can.
The part of the problem, Adam, is that they are indoctrinated from their childhood. You've probably also seen some of the videos of memorials and museums that are very militaristic, and the parents, all of whom have served at one point or another in the Israeli Defense Forces, mm-hmm. because it's mandatory. They take their young children there, put them in the tanks, they let them, you know, play with the machine guns and things, and they talk with them and they encourage them to, one day when you grow up, you need to go fight the Arabs. And you watch some of these children in some of these interviews where the interviewer is saying, when you were in the tank, what were you imagining? And they say, oh, I was imagining that the tank was surrounded by Arabs. And what did you do? Well, I imagined running over them. How did that make you feel? It made me feel happy. And child after child after child that is interviewed, they talk like this. And so they grow up decades of this kind of psychotic indoctrination. No wonder they become these violent racists. Our own kids here in the United States, if we taught them to hate blacks or taught them to hate Hindus or whatever group, decades of it, they're going to grow up and they're going to be racist. So there is an institutionalized system of brainwashing going on in Israel. And you can hear it in when you try to engage these Zionists in what should be respectful debate. Disagreements are fine. We talk about differences of opinion. But it's very rare that you can talk with an Israeli Zionist or a dual citizen, American-Israeli citizen, and talk with them about this issue in a rational way. You get pure, raw rage from them. And that's because they've been brainwashed.
Yeah, I think everybody's been brainwashed on this topic. You and I both felt when we were, when we were in Palestine last week, we fly back. The first thing I see when I get off the plane when I'm back to America is you holding up your phone with the synagogue shooting. And it's like I was ready to come back fired up. I was going to be exposing all this stuff, speaking out more vocal and hardcore than ever. And now we have the media everywhere. It's like the public enemy number one right now is the conspiracy theories about anti-Semitism.
Yeah. Yeah, that was after my initial reaction was those poor people. My second reaction was, man, the media is going to have a field day with this. Right as we are coming home ready to talk about the issues, it's going to be far more dangerous than ever to talk about these things in social media without the risk of community standard strikes and accusations of anti-Semitism and things like that. And I think we're still at that point where we have to be somewhat cautious in how we talk about the issues. I wish that we could just talk straight out without any hesitation whatsoever, but we do have to be careful in how we discuss the issues, because if they take away our voices, if the channels are purged, there goes our ability to influence those that follow us.
I don't think they care if we're being honest or we're being fair,
really,
or we're being conservative. You know, they'll censor you anyway. You just put a compilation of a rabbi saying a few supremacist thing, and they'll censor that. There's a complete bias and double standard. They're suppressing information that contradicts them. And what I'm seeing is, ever since the attack, they're not focusing on, oh, this is a mentally ill guy that just, a cold-blooded murderer. They're blaming the ideology. They're attacking the internet and social media for not censoring anti-Semites. And we're not having a conversation, any conversation or any honest debate on if the things that he was upset about have any legitimacy. They're just instantly dismissing them without any discussion, calling them hate speech, calling them conspiracy theories. I mean, when you call something hate speech, it's like saying you're applying intent. Like, if you say, oh, the Jews control the media, they say, that's hate speech, that's anti-Semitic. But it's like, if you say, you know, any statistical thing like, oh, that team is that basketball team is mostly African American guys. There's nothing racist about that to say it.
Right. It's not considered a conspiracy theory. Like, oh, you're pushing conspiracy theories that the Chicago Bulls are 60% black. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's just the reality of how it is. It's not a conspiracy theory, but that's what they do. The anti-Semite card is very powerful, and hopefully, though, it has been overused to the point that it's starting to lose some effect. I'm seeing more and more people in social media that are understanding mm-hmm. that this is really just a form of speech control. It's a way to suppress opinions. Unfortunately, it's those are still in the minority. But mm-hmm. I think if we keep talking about it, gradually people will wake up to it.
We can't,
and that's their greatest weapon. That's their greatest weapon.
Semantics.
Once they
can
no longer use the anti-Semite card, they've got nothing left to defend themselves with.
Because right now they're just labeling any criticism at all. That's like saying you can't even be a journalist. Like, I can't be a journalist and object to something that the state of Israel is doing. They're just saying any kind of criticism, all of it is hate and it's anti-Semitism. Like, at the same time, Netanyahu did a tweet today that they're leading the world in almost every industry. So they're leading the world. He brags at APEC that they're dominating in high tech and all these other things. It's one of the strongest militaries. They got illegal nukes. They claim they're the highest IQ, but now they're also telling us that we're not allowed to criticize anything they do anymore. Like, it's just a recipe for the worst disaster imaginable.
Yeah, yeah. I was skimming through this book by Seymour Hersh today, the Samson option, Israel's nuclear arsenal and American foreign policy. And you and I talked about this just super briefly when we were there in Israel, because we saw that big picture on the wall mm-hmm. Of Samson pushing the columns. But Seymour Hersh goes through in the Samson option, and this really talks about the secret nuclear arsenal that Israel has that they won't admit, and how they built it up and how they have used it over the years, basically to blackmail the United States. And one of the things that they did, which caught Ronald Reagan by surprise, was when they attacked the nuclear facilities in Iraq. The United States had been selling to Israel F-16 fighter jets, but on the condition that they only be used for defense, never use them offensively, and yet they carried out this offensive attack on Iraq without even mentioning it beforehand to the Reagan administration. And their justification, what the Israeli government said, was, we had to do this because Iraq was going to carry out a second Holocaust. And so we have to prevent that from ever happening again. And it was Menachem Begin that was making that. In fact, let me read the quote here. So there's fallout from this. At first, Israel was not admitting that they were even the ones that carried out the airstrikes. It was supposed to remain a secret, but Menachem Begin, from the Irgun days, he was excited to brag about it. It says, on the next day, as Israel was besieged with protests, the prime minister defended the operation and vowed that Israel was ready to strike again, if necessary, to prevent an enemy from developing the atomic bomb. Quote, if the nuclear reactor had not been destroyed, Begin said, another Holocaust would have happened in the history of the Jewish people. There will never be another Holocaust. Never again. Never again. But then Seymour Hersh goes on to quote Israeli sources, Israeli military sources and government sources, who said that Begin was totally making that up, that Israel knew that Iraq did not have any kind of nuclear capacity, that they didn't have a viable nuclear program to begin with. And in fact, while they were Begin was out there making these statements, he was still refusing to acknowledge to the U.S. government or the international community that they themselves had, like 100 feet down in the ground, their own nuclear facilities where they were developing nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. And so it's complete hypocrisy that they say, let's go get Iran. Why? Because they're making nuclear weapons. All right, well, the IAEA has thoroughly examined and continues to examine all of their facilities, and there is no evidence whatsoever that Iran is anywhere close or even trying to develop nuclear weapons. And yet here we have the drums of war being beaten by Donald Trump on behalf of the Israelis, beating the drums of war to go in there and knock off the regime in Iran under this false pretense that Iran is developing nuclear weapons. And yet all along, no one is asking Israel, wait a second, don't you guys have 100 or so nukes? And are you not the ones that routinely go on the offensive militarily against your neighbors? Shouldn't you be the ones that we're concerned about destabilizing the Middle East and from there the rest of the world? But we just don't ask those questions, or at least our governments don't. That's because our governments shill for Israel, unfortunately.
Yeah, our governments and our media. I learned just the other day, I learned something. Oh, and by the way, just the double standards and the hypocrisy, just like you said, over and over again, examples of it. But I wanted to share with you and share with everybody else, on Netflix, there's a show called FATA, so like Intifada, and it's the BDS was trying to get it shut down because they said it's racist and it's Zionist propaganda. And what happened was all these Hollywood executives wrote a letter in support of Netflix. So, and Netflix has a show that's anti-Palestinian called FATA, and then they have a pro Zionist show called Mossad, where they just glamorize the Mossad, yeah, like they're the best. It's just the propaganda is so intense. While I was over there, I saw a video that just came out on YouTube, and it was the truth about Israel and Palestine. And it was literally like he was filming the same things that I had seen that day and spinning them and inverting the truth to be the absolute lie. Like that it seems like they do that almost on every occasion. They invert what the actual truth is and just do psychological projection. And it works. It's like they're playing a game and it's rigged and they're just like a few steps ahead or something. It's just so irritating.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can almost always know what's really going on, what the Israeli government is really doing, based on what they're accusing others of doing. Now, almost without fail, whatever they're accusing some other nation of doing, that's what they've got going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Look here, I got it up on the screen now. You guys can see it.
Yeah, Mossad 101.
Right here, FATA. So Intifada makes the Palestinians look bad, like terrorists. Mm-hmm. And then you got Mossad here, the heroes. And I've already done several videos exposing Netflix. They think 9/11 Truth is hilarious and are always making all these jokes about it and to try to ridicule it and make it look insane.
Mm. Yeah.
So I noticed your tweets have been on fire since you got back, and I took the liberty of screenshotting a few of them. I wonder if we could show them and see if you could expand any more on them.
Sure.
Here's a good one here. Israel stole West Jerusalem in 1948. It occupied East Jerusalem in 1967. In 1980, Israel declared United Jerusalem its capital, which, by the way, Brazil just announced it too, in Australia. And isn't that crazy that this Brazilian president gets in and just announces it like one of the first things? We're moving the capital, Jerusalem. His son was photoed wearing a Mossad shirt, just like Tommy Robinson. I thought about throwing a Mossad hat on you that was at the airport and taking a picture and trying to ruin your career.
Yeah, that would do it. That would do it.
So another double standard is the Nakba in 1948, that they just massacred villages, kicked ethnically cleansed Palestinians off of their land, and they're not even allowed to talk about it. They're not allowed to teach it in the schools and put it in the textbooks. You can go to prison for inciting violence, or it's a security risk to talk about the Holocaust that the Palestinians went through. But the double standard that all over the world, in many countries, you go to jail if you even question the Jewish Holocaust. It's just like a double standard at every place you look.
So about this this tweet, as of, well, the turn of the century, around 1900, there were less than 5% of the land in what is today Israel-Palestine. Less than 5% was owned by Jewish people. They had, in the late 1800s, Zionism under Theodore Herzl. They kind of had this program where they were trying to buy up land, thing they could buy enough territory. So it's important to keep in mind that there was a movement. Zionism was a movement from the late 1800s. This is long before the Holocaust of World War II. They're often, people misunderstand. They think, oh, well, the Holocaust is the reason that the Jews needed land. They were after this land long before that. So after the Balfour Declaration, we get to where you've got influxes of Jews moving into the land, and they are engaging in terrorism, outright, the classic definition of terrorism. They were killing, the enemies that they were really going after were not so much the Palestinians at first as it was the British soldiers, because this British mandate was being maintained. They couldn't take control because the British were there. So they were engaging in terrorism against the British. Eventually, the British decide they're going to pull out. And with that, the United Nations goes and they debate, what should we do here with this? And they decide, look, the majority in the land are the Palestinians. But there is a sizable Jewish presence now. So let's divide up the land. We're going to give part of the land to the Jews to be their homeland, and the rest to the Palestinians. But Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, because there's so much contention over it and no way to really resolve it, that is going to remain an international city. So in 1948, Israel declared its independence, and they immediately launch a system of ethnic cleansing. And between 48 to 49, they went through and ethnically cleansed over 500 Palestinian towns and villages. They drove them out.
750,000.
Yeah, 750,000 people fled their homes, some into other countries, some of them just into different parts of the Palestine. And Israel grabbed that land and took control of it. Part of what they took control of was Jerusalem. They got control of the western part. They would have gotten all of Jerusalem except Transjordan, which was there at the time. They defended it. They fought them off and kind of kept the Israelis from taking both sides. But you skip forward to 1967, and Israel goes and they grab the Golan Heights in Syria. They grab the Sinai Peninsula from Egypt. They grab more territory there from the Palestinians, including going in and occupying East Jerusalem. Now, under international law, a military occupation of a territory, one of the things that you just cannot do is to go in and take control of the homes, live in the homes, settle in those homes. Every nation on the earth, up until Donald Trump, every single country in the world universally acknowledged that Israeli settlement building in these occupied, militarily occupied territories is against international law, and it constitutes a war crime. Donald Trump has kind of changed that. He has, I don't really look to Trump for, like wisdom or having a good grasp of how the law works or anything like that. But with him setting the precedent, essentially what he has done is said, we acknowledge that all of Jerusalem belongs to the Israelis, despite the fact that the rest of the world, through the United Nations, Resolution 478, has said that Israel's claim to Jerusalem as well as to these other occupied territories, it's null and void.
And so over and over again, the UN passes these resolutions where the whole Human Rights Council or the Security Council says that the settlements are illegal and the bombing of Gaza is illegal, and the U.S. vetoes it every single time, protecting them against the whole rest of the world.
And those rare instances where the United States simply abstains to allow the rest of the Security Council's vote to carry weight, Israel goes nuts. Oh, they're anti-Semitic. Well, the United States has become so anti-Semitic because they abstained, because they were not that lone voice to veto the will and the statements of the rest of the world. So this picture that you had up there of me from that tweet with the Dome of the Rock in the background, right, just, I don't know, maybe about 50 yards from this spot, not even that, maybe about 25 yards, this is up behind, not behind me here, but if I was facing the other way, behind me, this is up on the Mount of Olives. Behind me on the hill was a Jewish settlement on the Mount of Olives, and this was late at night, no one else was out there but me, no tourists. So I'm up there alone.
You needed there for backup, Jake.
I should have taken.
You told
someone
me about
me.
It.
I did not know there was a Jewish settlement right up there.
You told me that you were going to sneak off and head up there. I didn't know you were going that night. Plus, that was the first day we got there. I was exhausted.
Yeah,
I was up for 2 days straight. So,
I was up there just taking pictures of the Jerusalem down below. And a car full of Jewish settlers pulled up next to me. I mean, 6 feet away from me. And they stop, and these guys, they put their windows down, and they're just giving me the evil eye. And I'm thinking, all right, I've got my backpack on. I'm thinking through, all right, which snaps do I need to hit to be able to pull this pack off quick so I can, defend myself? Because I thought these guys were going to jump out and attack me. They were certainly giving me the vibe. So they drove off, and I thought, all right, I'm going to walk down further where there's more lights. And then these three teenagers started following me, and they followed me, and they're yelling stuff. It was in Hebrew, so I don't know what they were saying, but you could tell it was mockery. They didn't like that I was there. And I was thinking, no wonder when Jesus kept coming to Jerusalem, he was having to bash it out with the Pharisees, these people who anytime he came down and preached peace, they would pick up stones to try and kill him. It's like not much has changed. The mentality of the settlers is just pure violence. They are ready to do anything physically. They don't want to talk.
It's the worst entitlement I've ever seen. These Russian Jews coming down to this Palestinian land and just saying, God gave this to us, and then thinking in their head that entitles them to murder people and kick them out of their homes. In Hebron, there's homes literally thousands of years old, these homes, and the Israeli military shuts down the front road. People can't go out on their front doorstep and walk down the road anymore. They have to have ladders that go up to the back window so they can climb down the back way and then walk probably 5 miles around the whole city to get just to their next door neighbor. It's out of control that what they do to them over there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's crazy.
Okay. Here's another one that I liked a lot. This is, hold on. Let's skip that one. this one about BDS first. We kept hearing over and over again about how BDS, you know, I put it in the thumbnail of this video, how important this is. It's like their kryptonite over there in Israel. They can't stand BDS. They told us at the university, the professor said that all of the Israeli academics over there, that they're the ones that are really perpetuating this and masterminding the occupation, that they're openly bragging and writing papers about how they're studying past colonization of the British and other empires and South Africa, and that they're really trying to, they look at this like methodically and systematically how they're trying to oppress in every way possible. So BDS is huge to hurt them. Netanyahu claims it doesn't, but we know that it really does. And he threatens that people that are boycotting them, that he's going to turn around and boycott those countries. So it's war here, but let's read this one here. BDS is, so this person tweets out that BDS is a psyop produced by neocons to legitimize anti-Semitism laws. Go your own way, become an establishment anti-Zionist. Like, this is just a Hasbara disinfo propaganda tweet, probably.
Yeah, it's trying to neuter the, you know, BDS by, and it's done in a smart way. This is, you know, they clearly they know how to appeal to our side. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the neocons. This
they
is
try
a
everything.
BDS is a neocon scheme. You know, which is the exact opposite from the truth.
It's sophisticated propaganda, and they really hit you at every single angle. Like, they leave no stone unturned with the propaganda and with the security and with the double standards. So anyway, you say BDS is not a psyop. You are spreading disinfo to try to stop the most powerful movement against the Zionists in existence today. BDS is how we cripple the enemy with economic warfare. It's working, which is why Israel is terrified. Hashtag BDS. So well said. I love that. 100 likes, 54 retweets. Your retweets have been on fire since you've been home too, huh?
Yeah, I guess. I have no context, nothing to compare it to. Because like I said, before this trip, I wasn't really, I only rarely tweeted anything out. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad for any exposure.
I've been there. Noticing the attacks on my channel, the racist, vile, just the worst stuff you could imagine. Comments I'm seeing from these Zionist extremist mentality people on my page, like way worse than ever. I'm seeing stuff. I'm starting to screenshot them and save them so I can do a little video of all my deleted Hasbara comments.
And remember, the Zionists are these are sharp guys. And from going back to my my days as a political strategist, I'm very much, in fact, the reason I got out of politics, political campaigning, and everything is because I knew what I needed to do to win. It's there's nothing dirtier than politics, the game of politics. And I just wasn't willing to do a lot of the things that really needed to be done to win against the enemy. I just, it felt wrong to me. But I see in a lot of the, with a lot of the Zionists, they masquerade sometimes as anti-Zionists. Mm-hmm. And they will say things sometimes that are so wildly inappropriate, you know, praising Hitler. You know, it's one thing to say, you know, Hitler, you know, Hitler this or Hitler that, but to, you know, just praise Hitler. Hitler was right, and, you know, you need to burn all of the Jews in the ovens and all that stuff. Like, they say things that are so awful that it's meant to make the rest of us look extreme and anti-Semitic by association. And it's not good, but it's cunning. They're very cunning. Very cunning.
How dirty politics are. Do you remember what the Palestinian banker told us? That was it. We said, you should be in politics. That was his answer. He's like, it's too dirty. It's too dirty for me.
Yeah.
He knew it.
Yeah. When a banker says something's too dirty for me, that's saying something.
Okay, so here's the last tweet we'll go to. This is another going to be, stay tuned for this video when this comes out. This was one of our last days in the city of Lydda, and we met the top rapper, the biggest rapper, Palestinian rapper over there, And a top journalist and documentary filmmaker gave us the tour around there. We visited a school, but this was the highlight of that day for me. Why don't you explain this to the folks watching? And then we're going to get to the Super Chats and close it out, hopefully, guys, in another 15 minutes or so. It's late over there for Jake, and I'm gracious for all the time you've given us already.
Oh, glad to, Adam. I appreciate you having me on. I hope we can do some more in going forward. But
absolutely.
Regarding this one, I had a strong emotional experience at this location, because this is one of those places that I had read about in Ilan Pape's, who is a Jewish historian. Pape wrote The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, and I had read the story of what happened in this town in 1948, and how the IDF had gone in and just butchered people, went into homes. They were throwing grenades into the homes of civilians, and the survivors that didn't get killed by the grenades, as they came out, they would get gunned down. And in that exact mosque that was in the tweet there, they shelled it. They went in and just massacred people in there, and they killed hundreds of people in this village in a single day. The barbarity is just—it's unspeakable. How there could be such evil in people's hearts. It's one thing to commit atrocities in a time of war against other soldiers or something, but unarmed civilians going in, slaughtering women and gunning down children is unconscionable.
So this was in 1948. There was a mosque. There was a bunch of families, men, women, and children in there, and they told us the story. They had a rocket launcher or an anti-tank missile. They shot through the side of it, threw a bunch of grenades and smoke bombs, and just slaughtered everybody in there. And we know about this because Palestinian or IDF soldiers did interviews, and they were like bragging, and then it was going to be in a documentary, but it was like it hit the cutting room floor, but somebody got it anyway. And the saddest part was that they left the bodies in there for a week. And then they forced the families of these people and children to go into the mosque when they were just rotting and smelly and blood everywhere. They said it looked like a Picasso painting. That's the way they described it. Like it was art.
And to retrieve body parts. Yeah, to pull it out.
Yeah, they had all the kids go in and pull out the bodies. This is terrible. And then move them in the center of the square where we were standing. And then they burned them all. And then the Palestinians go there like every year or to protest and stuff. That's the protest square. And the military surrounds them, and the settlers throw rocks at them and stuff. It's just, it's so sickening. And they just recently, so it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was closed for decades. And just recently they forced them to go in and clean up all of the blood off the walls because they wanted to erase what they had done there. Which seems to be another trend that happens there, is trying to cover up and bury and pretend like Palestinian people never existed. Their culture, they want to erase. That's why resistance for them is just educating themselves and keeping their culture alive.
The resilience of the Palestinians is incredible. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. I think that one of the things is a cultural stubbornness. So many people in this same situation would have said long ago, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. This is a largely barren land, rocks everywhere, abject poverty. Why are we here? They torture us. Let's just go. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're in Gaza, you can't just go. But elsewhere, you might be able to get into Jordan or somewhere else. But they don't. Most of them stay. And they endure. Mm-hmm. And so I really wondered about that during this trip. What was it? And they have such a sense of appreciation for their own culture. They want to preserve their own culture. They're a proud people, and they have reason to be. The arts, Their culture, the food is magnificent. It's the food itself is a form of artwork. It's delicious. It looks beautiful. The people,
they're so educated and like politically aware and just like had fire in their eyes, and that they're so hospitable. You wouldn't believe it. Just like everywhere on the street, kids, teenagers, adults, welcome, welcome, talking to us, taking photos, just smiles on their faces, given the oppression that they're under. It's such an inspiring thing. It really makes you, you think about your first world problems all the time and how irrelevant they are. And it really puts things into perspective.
You know, that's when I first, when I came back the first few days that I was home, I felt this malaise. I felt guilt. I knew I wasn't doing anything wrong. This is, you know, I live in a first world country and I have all these privileges and everything. But I kept thinking, when I went and would turn on the water, I would think, I have water every single day and I don't have some tyrannical government trying to ration my water. I can say what I want. I remember spending time with my little boy, just sitting there watching him thinking, this beautiful child of mine does not have to worry about being accosted by grown men with machine guns just so they can harass the kid to get at me. So much of what is being done to the Palestinians it's stunning to the senses, and anyone with a conscience who learns about what's going on there cannot help but moved. And the people have got two problems. One is obviously the problem of Israel, but they also struggle with a somewhat dysfunctional political system themselves. There are rival parties and factions. There has been corruption. They face kind of the same thing as any people, where you've got the political class that often does not have the best interests of the people at heart. And so they struggle in that sense as well. But the people themselves, the average people out there, they are some of the best people that I have ever met. I have always thought that the Thai people that I lived among for a couple of years were, you know, the most kind-hearted, generous people, despite their poverty, wonderful, good people. And the Palestinians were so much like that. I've been to a lot of different countries and experienced different cultures and people, and I would put the Palestinians up there right at the top as far as being some of the best human beings that I've met.
Yeah, it really makes you just want things to turn out for them and for them to get the karma and the justice that they all deserve.
Yeah.
You ready for a few super chats?
Sure.
Okay, I'm just going to say thank you to everybody that supports first, Jake and I, Patreon and PayPal and Super Chats. We appreciate them so much. We wouldn't be able to do this without you, and your support means everything to us. So Michael Henderson says, can you mention the censorship of Ryan Dawson, please? Absolutely. I've been tweeting about it and sharing all of his tweets, and I said it on Red Ice's live stream the other day. Ryan Dawson from the ANC Report recently had his Vimeo shut down. I was talking to him the day before, and he's like, yeah, Vimeo, it's my backup. It's less likely to be censored. It's good. You can have a little paywall up and stuff. Boom, they took down every single video he had, one after the other. And and they're even trying to make him pay them money. So more censorship. We always have to speak out. While we were gone, one of my favorite YouTubers, Johnny Gat, had both of his channels taken down. And this is completely unjustified and illegitimate. We're not breaking terms of service. This is not hate. This is not racism. We're simply journalists pointing out crimes and injustice, and they're trying to take that ability away from us by calling us hateful racists. Okay, here's another one. Removing Zog says, Adam and Jake, kudos, 21st century world message here. In order for the world to live, the Jewish cult must and will be removed from the world stage. This will happen with the final book in 2019, E equals F. You heard anything about 2019, Jake?
No, I don't think so. No, sorry, I'm not familiar.
All right. Well, thank you for the support, Removing Zog. Jake Adam, may I suggest you interview Sarah Wilkinson and Allison Weir? They have been advocating for the Palestinians for decades. I've heard of Allison Weir. Have you heard of either of them before, Jake?
Sarah Wilkinson? Sarah Wilkinson, in fact, today was liking and retweeting a couple of the things. I retweet her stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if guys are on Twitter and you want to follow what's going on in Palestine, Sarah Wilkinson, look her up. Very good, very passionate, good information about what's going on over there.
Mm-hmm. And while we're talking about looking up, everybody make sure to follow at Morphonios on Twitter. And, of course, Blackstone Intelligence Network, almost to get them up to 200K subs. You really are one of the best truth warriors out there, one of the best and the biggest, Jake. So I'm glad that you're out there doing what you're doing.
Thank you, thank you.
And Blackstone Intelligence Network is the website where people can support you and figure out all your links and your videos. You also have a backup channel, too, everybody. I need to get my backup channel going, but Jake already has his. What is it?
My backup channel is Jake333, so youtube.com/Jake333. The primary one is youtube.com/prepare333, and the backup is Jake333. They'll definitely purge me. I lost my first channel back in 2014. They just shut me down in 24 hours, and it was because I was reporting on this stuff.
Was that End Times News Report? That's when I started following you. Was the old background before you had your mega library there behind you?
And, right. My first End Times News Report channel was shut down, and then I got the new one going, which was still End Times News Report. I kept the same name until eventually I switched it to Blackstone Intelligence. But I was part of the YouTube purge early this year when they took down a ton of channels. Mine was one of the bigger ones that got pulled with the, you know, three strikes in 24 hours where you couldn't appeal. Mm-hmm. They took me down.
And you were telling me about the Las Vegas shooting. You got tons of press, and then you got misquoted by the USA Today, and then they had to retract. Can you tell us about that real quick? That's an interesting story.
Wall Street Journal. Okay. Yeah, they fabricated a quote. So sometimes people give me a hard time. They say, oh, Jake's on Russian television. You know, he's on this Russian TV show and that Russian TV show. He's a Russian shill. First of all, pay attention to what I'm saying. I'm not shilling for Russia. What I'm doing is talking about CIA operations. The problem is Russia gives me a platform to say these things, whereas here in the United States, I would go on Fox News or CNN or MSNBC. I would go on any of these stations if I could get my message out, but they don't want to hear from me. So, you know, that's not my fault. So back when the Las Vegas thing was going on, the Las Vegas investigation, if you went to Google or YouTube and typed in Las Vegas shooting, the third ranking on Google out of millions of hits was me. There was Time Magazine, some UK publication, and then my channel. And then down the list, you've got CNN, Wall Street Journal, all these others. So a lot of media outlets here in the United States started complaining about that. And there was like 20 or so articles that were written talking about this. How did this no-name nobody get, you know, outrank CNN and everyone else? So the Wall Street Journal contacted me. They wanted to do a story on it. You know, how did you get ranked? Now, I knew in advance that U.S. media is dishonest, so I flipped on the, you know, tape recorder to record the phone call. And so the reporter spent 30 minutes trying to get me to say one thing. He wanted me to say, I know that I am not as legitimate as the Wall Street Journal as a reporter. And I told him a million different ways. I completely reject that. I was a financial crimes investigator for one of the biggest banks in the world, and the investigative work that I did was professional. It had to hold up in court. It had to be, you know, spotless. So I take the same standards of professionalism that I used there in the corporate world, and I apply it to my journalism. So I told him, I don't agree that I'm any less of a reporter. In fact, I'm probably much more of a credible reporter. So I will not say what you're asking me to, and I would appreciate it if you don't misquote me. So the article comes out the next day, and you can see this online if you look it up. And it says, it's got me quoted saying, I know that I'm not as reputable as the Wall Street Journal or New York Times. The exact opposite. So what I did was I made a quick video announcing that I would be suing the Wall Street Journal for libel. And I included a clip only of me talking because it's, one-party state rules. I couldn't really indicate that I had them. But I had my part of the conversation where I specifically said the exact opposite. And I said, you've got 24 hours to issue a correction or I'm suing. And they did. The next day, they published a retraction, a correction, and they admitted. Jake did not say this. Here's what he actually said. And the actual quote was pretty much the opposite. So so I made the point, this is why I was ranked number three. This is why the public, without the gerrymandering of social media in bed with the mainstream media, this is why independent media is a source that so many people go to, because they know that the mainstream media is dishonest. They know that if the mainstream media can't get the story they want, they'll just fabricate it. They'll make up what they want. If you're Fox News, you'll say whatever you want to shill for Donald Trump. If you're, if you're MSNBC or CNN, you're going to say whatever to support Hillary. It doesn't matter what the facts are. You just cater to your demographic. That's not real news. That's not real journalism. That's dishonesty. So
that's why they were trying to crack down on us. Yeah, with that article, the whole plan was, oh God, we're losing control of the narrative. The independent media online is people are trusting them more. So through these big politicized events, they are always trying to say we got to bury the conspiracy theories and fix the algorithms and put mainstream media at the top, as if it's not already an unfair advantage already. They're multinational billion-dollar companies. They've got every upper hand on us, and we just want an even playing field with fair algorithms, but they can't allow that. So I'm sure with this latest synagogue shooting, they're going to clamp down even more, especially on the type of topics that we talk. And they don't ever differentiate between legitimate criticism and hate. They just label it all as hate, dismiss it, just like they dismiss everything as a conspiracy theory. Now they're lumping that magic word conspiracy theory with the magic word anti-Semite, and they're trying to crack down. They set the precedent with Alex Jones, the Zionist fall guy, now to move the Overton window. Now that, if Alex is banned, we got to ban Farrakhan for what he says, and we got to ban the GDL for what they do, and we got to ban these guys because they criticize Israel as anti-Semitic. I just did a documentary right before we left to Palestine called The Truth About Anti-Semitism, and it has you can watch that and tell that this was right about to happen, that they were going to do this big crackdown. And it's like the shooting came just at the right time for them to use this crisis.
Yeah.
Okay, super chats, and we got to get Jake out of here. It's late over on the East Coast. Okay, so Sarah Wilkinson and Allison Ware, we will do that. You'll do interviews with them, I'm sure, Jake. I will too. Palestine shall be free very soon. I sure hope so. They need to get rid of the checkpoints. They need to lift the siege on Gaza and let them trade and be, free, have freedom. What else would you like to see over there? Like immediate changes, the checkpoints, the water, the settlements. They keep building more settlements too, as if there's not enough Palestinians.
Ladies
over
and
there
gentlemen,
in poverty,
you are listening to No More News and Blackstone Intelligence live stream after the return of coming back from Israel and their Palestine trip.
The supremacy. It's pure racial supremacy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Any other observations? Like what would you change if you could snap your fingers and have something change in Palestine, Israel?
If I could snap my fingers, I would I would give more voice to the voices among the Jewish population that are interested in peace. I would amplify their voices, give them a fair opportunity to talk to their
Remember what they said about the academics? Remember what they told us, that not one Israeli academic has spoken out against the occupation? Because, like, apparently you'll just lose your job and just be on the streets if you speak out against the system with these people that are already stuck in it.
Yeah. I was very impressed over there that with the many, many people that we talked to, I did not hear one Palestinian broad brush Jews and say, you know, Jews are bad.
I know.
The Jews are bad people.
Not a hateful or a violent word from them, even though given all the stuff that's happened to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The true observation, like we hear in the media and the Zionists want to tell us that they're all terrorists and they want to chop our heads off and rape our children and all this stuff. Absolutely couldn't be any farther from the truth. Just whatever the Zionist says, literally just invert what they're saying and you'll probably actually get the truth.
Right.
Okay. Allison Weir, this is org where one can donate. Palestinian Children's Relief Fund. Okay. I haven't vetted that, but it sounds good. Palestinian Children's Relief Fund. Anna Reyes says, if AmericansNew.org has practical recommendations on how to take actions against Zionism, Americans in the world need to know that billions of U.S. money go to Israel, a country with nuclear programs. Yes. It is illegal that we're sending them any money because they're technically a rogue nuclear state because they haven't signed the non-proliferation agreement. Meanwhile, they advocate that we bomb other countries for just trying to have peaceful nuclear reactors for energy.
Yeah.
Jake and Adam, were you able to meet any libertarian anarcho-capitalist Israelis in your observation? How many Israelis are actually Zionists? Do you want to answer that one?
I didn't meet any while we were over there. We did have one person at a dinner who is was actually female, a friend of someone who was in our group. Mm-hmm. Who was she's Jewish. She is actually in Israel studying to become a rabbi, but she was an activist who had been spending time in Khan al-Ahmar, which is that tiny little Bedouin camp, the settlement that the Israelis have been trying to bulldoze for some time now. And it was interesting listening to her. She had some good thoughts, clearly cared about the plight of the Palestinians. As far as what percentage are Zionists, the vast majority, I would say, maybe 10-15% of the Israelis are not Zionists. Mm-hmm. And it also depends on how you define Zionism, because there are different ways of looking at it. But in one form or another, I would say a good 80-85% of the Israelis are Zionists.
Mm-hmm. And I hold them... anybody that's not vocally speaking out and condemning and disavowing what the
ladies and gentlemen, Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio broadcast on RBN. You were listening to Adam Green at No More News and Jake Morfonios from Blackstone Intelligence on their trip to Israel, Palestine. Very important episode that I wanted to share with you all tonight. I was here with you every minute of that broadcast. An amazing broadcast. Go to rtrtruthmedia.com. Smash that PayPal button. $25. Every $25 you spend is a chance to win a $500 or better name brand computer. We'll see you next time. Resurrect the Republic. Truth Radio Broadcast. rtrtruthmedia.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. owner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.